All we need is a little understanding. Walk a mile in their shoes. And if we keep our hearts open-minded, we'll enjoy this wild ride called life. And if we keep our hearts open-minded, we'll enjoy this wild ride. This wild ride called life.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the True Sweet High Podcast. I'm excited because this is part of our season two and we're doing things differently. So we have Amelia Zachary on here, and what I really appreciate is when we have guests that want to talk about the hard stuff and have the hard conversations. And part of her journey is the reality of mental illness and parenting with mental illness, which is such a hard topic to talk about. And I'm just so grateful that she has agreed to just spill it all, just tell it all, real stuff, hard conversations. And so if you're listening out there, be ready to take notes, be ready to just let it all sink in, because this is real stuff, you guys. So thank you so much, Amelia, for being on here. Please tell us what you do right now, and then we'll go into your story.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me. I think this is such an important conversation to have, and I'm so glad that you're allowing me to be part of this conversation that normalizes mental health, mental illness. Of course. I am a writer, and I am in the process of writing my memoir, which tells my reality and my experience with post-trauma processing and bipolar disorder, and my life with bipolar disorder.
That's incredible. That takes true strength to be able to do that. What made you decide that to actually share this in a book?
I think it was really my daughters. It is a book dedicated to my children, where I want them to grow up in a world where it is okay to have an illness. It's not by choice. It is not their fault if a violation does occur in their life. And I want them to know that they can be strong for it and they can come through it, and that I'll be here for them, and that I've done the difficult things, and that I hope that it'll inspire them and give them hope for days that may be too dark for them.
What an inspiration. That's really a beautiful thing. I'm proud of you. That's huge.
Thank you. Thank you.
So go ahead and tell us about your life, like how you grew up and how you got to where you are now.
So I was born and raised in Malaysia. And so I was also raised in a very close, tight-knit family. We're really close, but nobody really talks about the emotional stuff. Yeah. We hug and kiss, and we're really close through all the happy times, and we get mad at each other fiercely, but the emotional stuff, the hard stuff, was difficult to bring out within the family. And so I was raped when I was 19. And because of the stigma, and I think this terrible, disgusting rape culture we live in, I was pushed into isolation. So I was told that it was my fault by the people who were my friends at the time. Also, that it was my fault, and that I was asking for it, or I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and any other excuse that you could think up within the rape culture, right? And so I didn't tell anybody, and I kept it to myself. And now, almost 20 years later, I'm in acceptance of the violation. I now understand that it was a violation, and I understand that it is something that had happened to me. But through that trauma, bipolar disorder was surfaced. So I have been in treatment and healing and growing over these years with the pain. And here I am today, I'm telling you the story. So I must be in a pretty good place.
Are when did you reach that place where you were comfortable enough to say, that's it, I need to start talking about it, or I want to start talking about it?
Actually, very recently, maybe about 4 months ago.
Oh, wow.
It was pillow talk with my husband. We were talking about it, and he said, you know, this is a powerful story to tell. And we were talking about what I would tell my children and how I would tell my children. And I feel like it's a very important thing for me to tell my girls about the world that they live in. And hopefully by the time they become young women themselves, that the world will be different and society will be different for them. And so I want to be part of making that change. Yeah. And so I decided that I had to speak up.
That's amazing, though, because not everybody can do that. They aren't ready to have that conversation out to the world. And so when you share your story, do you share it on social media, or do you speak about it at events, or how does that work?
So far, I've been, well, definitely into my book. A detailed account is in my book, but I do have a blog, and I write about my life with bipolar and my thought process, my mind on the pages for people to see what it's like.
That's incredible.
And I think, like you said, it's a difficult thing to talk about, right? It is, and it's not. It is because of the stigma around it.
Yes.
And what people think and say, and what would people think and say. But it's also been a very healing process for me. I've been on a few podcasts now, and the more I talk about it, I feel like I'm processing it as we speak.
Right.
And I'm learning more, and I'm growing more, and the understanding is deeper every time I speak about it.
It's pretty incredible what talking about it can do, right? It's freeing. It's like our own self-healing journey, and it does get a little bit easier each time, because it's like you're acknowledging it, and it's okay.
It's out there.
Yeah. It's out there, but it is, I'm so glad you mentioned about trying to end that stigma. So it's so important to keep having these conversations to do that, to show others that it's okay, you know, it's okay, and you can make it through, and to provide hope. So that's really incredible that you're doing it and writing it, putting it into a book. So it's definitely such a journey of strength. So that, and to leave such a beautiful legacy for your children too, that's really huge. What an inspiration.
Right now they're living it, so hopefully one day they'll be able to understand it.
Yeah. So what keeps you, what helps you to keep showing up each day?
My children, of course, but I feel like now I have I believe I'm a very spiritual person, and I believe in a higher power. I believe in my connectivity to the entire universe. I love going on hikes, and I love connecting with nature, because it makes me feel so small that I am just this tiny part of this humongous reality of the world, and that I matter for some reason. For some reason, I'm here, just like every leaf, every droplet, I matter for something. I don't know what that purpose is yet.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say I'm seeking a purpose anymore. I am of the understanding that our purpose for being is where we are and what we're doing. And so feeling that and knowing that, I think, keeps me going even on the bad days.
That's amazing. So what do you do when you're having a hard day? What is your go-to? What do you like to do, or what helps you?
So with bipolar, there's two polarities. I'm bipolar 2, which is hypomanic and depressive, or major depressive episodes, which are prolonged. So they're manifested and defined in the longer depressive states. So in the hypomanic state, it's amazing sometimes, because I'm highly creative. I'm the life of the party. I am creative. I'm hyper-focused on anything, and I get things done. But it's unhealthy because I'm hyper-focused. So then the sad days, I think that's the one that people see or you see in the movies or you hear people talk about where you're crying for days or you're not crying, but you need to cry. And for me, it's a lot of that, a lot of intense emotions that I have no root cause for, right? Like there's no, people always tell you like, oh, just snap out of it. Your life is great. You have two beautiful children. Everything is good. You know, bills are paid for. You have no worries. You should be feeling good. But that's the danger with depression, is there is no reason.
Yeah.
There isn't a reason. And with bipolar, there's an environmental factor and there's a biological factor to it. And so the environmental factor, I try my best to keep going so that I'm balanced. Like you said, like on hard days, I've already, on the good days, I prepare for the hard days.
Mm-hmm.
And for the hard days, I try to use whatever I've prepared. Like I have a routine, or I set myself a goal. Every single day I have a goal. It can be simple goals like brushing your teeth. Today I'm going to get up, I'm get out of bed, I'm going to brush my teeth. Even in hypomanic episodes, I'm paralyzed. It's debilitating because I have anxiety. I might start brushing my teeth and think like, oh, I need to go feed the dog. Oh, I need to go take this for my children. Oh, I need to do all these things. And then I get overwhelmed. And then it's anxiety over anxiety over anxiety, and it's heavy. So having placed all the things that I need in order before I get into that state is what helps me through the hard days. Like talking to my family, talking to my husband. I haven't done dishes in 10 years because it started out like this, because when I'm in my episodes, either way, I'm unable to do simple tasks. So my husband takes care of the simple tasks. Or when I'm in an episode, he takes care of the children. He gives me my space and we talk about today's goal. I tell him like, today, I just want to do this. Today, I want to watch an episode of something on TV. To be able to do simple things like that, that you don't even think that's going to be difficult. It's difficult. I couldn't get through an episode because my mind's racing.
Yeah.
So my husband taking those responsibilities and helping me out, like that allows me my space to heal and get feel better quicker.
Wow.
Was that an overload?
No, I mean, I think it's important to educate people who don't know, you know, what it's really like, you know,
yeah,
your day-to-day routine, what it's really like and how you live with it and how important it is to share it. So I appreciate you talking about that, because I'm sure it's, you know, it's definitely something that's been difficult to try to get through. So I thank you for that. And even to have the support of your husband, that's amazing. It really is. So
I've been blessed. I am grateful for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So how does your family, is it hard for you to have these conversations with your family now, or they understand and they're just accepting?
I think it's a mix. I don't think they understand. I don't think many people understand. But that's the whole thing. We don't talk about these things as a society in general. We don't talk about these things, and it's not, bipolar is something so taboo,
yeah,
and something that's so scary. And I think my family is of the mind that I'm getting it taken care of. And so they're accepting of that. But understanding the illness itself, I'm not sure that anybody really does, unless you're going through it or you're with me day to day. My husband has a deep understanding because he's been with me and he's been with me through treatment.
Yeah. So what is it like to go through treatment? Are you on medication, or are you able to do something else in lieu of that?
We have found from, I've been in treatment for like 10 years now. And so I've learned that for me, talk therapy and drug therapy together, this combo works for me. And so that's what I've been doing. And like, I don't think I would have come this far if I had not had treatment. Mm-hmm. And it was difficult finding treatment, finding somebody that I trusted or I liked or I wanted, but I kept going. I kept looking for someone and I found someone and I, excuse me. So I did find someone that I like and I trust. And so now we have a good therapeutic relationship, which helps me a lot with my day-to-day life.
That's wonderful. No, that really is.
I think that people have this adverse reaction to getting treatment. Mm-hmm. Because they say like, oh, if you just talked it out, we can talk it out. But talk therapy is not chit-chatting with your girlfriend. It's absolutely not. Like, talk therapy is by trained professionals who can give you the tools to manage your thoughts and to manage your behaviors and manage your lifestyle and routines. Yeah. And so I feel like that was so important to put out there, that just talking to your friends is not going to do it.
No, you're right.
It's not the same thing.
That's why it's so important to tell people that it's okay to go see therapy, because sometimes it isn't just talking to your friends. It's, you need more than that, and it's okay to get. And so, no, I appreciate you sharing that, because it is, there's a difference. There really is. So what advice would you give people then that are struggling or living with bipolar and don't know how to talk about it or where to go?
I think first of all is to accept that something is not right. You don't have to know what it is. I didn't know that I had bipolar. It wasn't like I went to the doctor and said, I have bipolar, so please help me.
Yeah.
I went to the doctor because something was not right. And my life was not fulfilling the way that I would like it to be. Mm-hmm. And I was self-destructive, and I was all these behaviors that were not rational. And so that's why I went to start to seek help. And when I sought help is when I found my diagnosis. So what I say with anybody with any kind of mental illness, you don't have to self-diagnose. It's okay to go get a checkup. It's okay to just go see someone and be truthfully honest and see where that goes. And hopefully you get the help that you need. Secondly, to accept help. That's the hardest thing to do, is to say that I need something, to tell somebody else that I need something. And in my depressive states, I usually think that, oh, nobody loves me, nobody cares about me, nobody's going to care, like, no one's going to help me, because nobody actually cares. But truth is, people do care, and or not, you wouldn't know until you ask for the help. And like, just choose the person that is most likely in your mind to be helpful. Whoever that person that's most likely, doesn't have to be a person that you're sure is going to help you. As long as it's someone that's most likely to help you, I think it helps to go and ask for help and accept the help. And then the other part of it is the people who are helping. I think that's a big part of the conversation when we talk about stigma and taboo and all these things. People have an expectation of what things need to be for you to get better. Oh, if you would just get out of bed now, go take a shower, you'll feel better. Or you just need to do this, this, and this, and then you'll be better. But those are the reality that I'm in those episodes, is my reality. They are my realities. They are the truth that I'm living in. So someone telling me to do something according to their reality is not really going to transfer well. So if you're going to help somebody, you need to be with them in that moment and just do whatever it is that they are asking help for. And don't presume to know that there's some. I might need help getting to the doctor, but I might ask you for help to drive me there. And you might be thinking, like, why would I need to drive you there? You have a car, you drive. But what I'm really saying is, I'm really struggling to get out of the house, and I know I need to see the doctor, but I just can't get myself there. Will you come help me? But those words are overwhelming to say. So if you're going to help somebody who's going through this, you really need to just put all your presumptions aside and help the person.
Wow, that's, thank you for sharing that. That's so important to know. So what do you want to do now? I know you're writing a book and you have a blog. Do you have anything else that you would like to do in the future to continue helping people?
I think my job is what I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. I want to keep talking about it. I want to keep talking about it till your ears are sore and you know all about it, all about my experience, and so that people can feel that it's normal, that it's a medical condition and that people can get help and people can help the people who need help.
Yeah.
And hopefully this will be normalized.
Are you part of any?
So that's my hope.
I'm sorry. No, that's a wonderful thing. Are you part of any groups? Because there's a million Facebook groups now, but is there any other place that people could go to be feel part of a community with others who understand?
I haven't been much of a social media person, but I do share my experience on my website, and it's my mind on the page. And so people can, I'm sure a lot of people can relate mm-hmm. to the things that I'm writing, and hopefully they feel at home and support it. But Facebook groups and groups like that, I haven't been very good about.
No, I understand. No, and that's okay. It's okay because sometimes Facebook or social media can be daunting and ugly. So website, blog, I think those are perfect places. So you can just go to the source, go to the person who's actually writing yeah. so that they can understand. So no, that's great. So what is your website?
It's AmeliaZachary.com. Amelia, Z-A-C-H-R-Y.
.com.
My Zachary spelled a little different.
No, I love it. I love it. Okay, that's perfect.
And there I also talk about parenting.
Oh, yeah.
With my kids, like stories from my children.
Yes. How do you have that conversation? How old are your children?
6 and 4.
6 and 4. So how do you have that conversation with them when you are having an episode?
So we have found that I have lived with a lot of guilt, feeling like I'm a terrible mother because I'm not doing the things that all these other moms are doing. I'm forcing my kids into this life where they're not going to like the same stuff that soccer or dance class or something that everybody else is doing because I can't keep up with commitments. And I feel guilty over it, and it's a lot of shame in it. And I make up excuses for the other moms, but why? Oh, you should put your daughter in this class. I'm like, oh yeah, but I have this other thing at that time, and you know, making up lies and excuses, and or oh, we're just not into it, or we just can't. And I feel guilt, but then my husband and I worked out that really, the things that my children have to do now to deal with the life that we live, it's actually helping them grow. Like I tell them that sometimes I'm ill right now. I'm not feeling well. Mommy's not being myself. Or sometimes when I'm hypomanic, I'm really irritable or anxious, and I'm overly worried about them or like overly irritated. And I tell them, I apologize. And I say, mommy's having an episode. I'm not feeling myself. I'm not feeling well. I apologize. And I remove myself. And from that, my children are also learning how to manage their emotions, right? Like, oh, I can be angry, or I can be all these things, or I can be ill, and this is how we will deal with it. And they are the most amazing children that ever was. So if I have depressive episodes and I can't get out of bed and I'm in bed all the time, my daughter comes to me and asks me, are you crying from nowhere again? And I tell her yes. And she goes like, okay, is there anything that I can do? And then I tell her no, and she's like, okay, I'm going to make lunch. And she'll make lunch for herself and her sister, and she'll bring lunch for me whether I eat it or not. But all these things that they have to do, in some form, I feel guilt for because they're so young. She's only 6. But at the same time, this is our life. This is how we live a fulfilling life. We support each other. Yeah. We take care of each other. And it's not every day. You know, I'm not having an episode every single day, but I know that if I was, my children are prepared.
Yeah.
And they're self-sufficient and they're independent and they're caring, empathetic, kind, generous individuals. And I think those are the kind of lessons that we want to teach our children and are very difficult lessons to learn. And so now they're learning the lessons. I'm not sure if they understand why and how they are, but I'm sure someday they will. And that helps with my parenting and my thoughts on parenting.
Yeah. That's a beautiful thing. It really is, because you are telling them the truth. I'm not feeling well. And they know. And they are willing to, they just go and help. They help you with it. So I think that's really great, because I didn't know how to do that with my kids. I lashed out in anger. I was very irritable. I had no patience, and they didn't know why. And I didn't know how to tell them why. So, you know, as they grew up into teenagers, now they know why I was just such in a bad place. So I wish I would have known how to have that conversation. But because I didn't know what was wrong, my husband didn't know what was wrong, we didn't know how to have that talk. So I think I think it's a beautiful.
And that's the thing, right, that we're talking about, normalizing mental health. If we knew, we had information, we would know how to, like, proceed. The problem is we don't talk about it, and then no one talks about it. We don't have anywhere to go, or a safe place to go, or a guide for how to do that. Because you're not going to go buy a book like how to parent children through mental illness because you lashed out at your child, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the normal things, that everyday normal things that happen. But I'm more aware of all these things because I've been in treatment, and I know that I understand to, like, pay attention to my levels in my moods. So when something is off, I actually know it's off. And so then I'm able to use that information to then parent my children. Like, this is going on. And also, the wonderful, beautiful thing is, because I don't know when the episodes are coming, I don't know how long they stay. So when I have a good stint, I have a balanced time, I say yes to everything. We have yes days. Okay, you want to go out to the park? Let's go. You want to do this? Let's go. You want to go hiking? Let's go. Because I want to make up for the days that I can't do it. And so that's forced us into a life of gratitude and true experiencing, being present for each other because of the unpredictability of the illness.
Wow. And you're right. There is no parenting book. There is no book on it. We do the best we can with what we know how, and then we teach them what we feel is right. And I think that, you know, that right there is just one of the most important things. So
we are always worried about the they, aren't we?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
what they are saying.
Yeah.
The elusive they, but there isn't a they. No one cares.
No, it's our family. It's just how we do it. And I think it's wonderful. It's wonderful how you're doing that. They're going to grow up. Your children are going to grow up and just be so grateful for what you have done for them. So I think that's really such a beautiful thing. And I love that you talk about it in your blog. That's great. So when do you expect your book to be out?
I hope sometime this year. It's in the editing stage. So I hope sometime this year, but we'll see.
Yeah.
So until then, go to my blog and check out all my musings, short stories on my life.
I love it. No, thank you so much. Thank you for being so open and for sharing this and for just being real. I appreciate it so much. So we will go to your website, AmeliaZachary.com. I'll put this in the podcast guide for you guys that are watching, and in the show notes, and keep up with her. Go follow her. Go keep up with her beautiful stories and then her book. So thank you so much for being on here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the True Sweet High podcast, created and founded by your host, Annette, the founder of A Wild Ride Call Life. Also, a big thank you to all of our sponsors for each and every episode that is aired. We have so much support from them and all of our listeners. You can find more information at www.awildridecalllife.com.